With Mother's Day just around the corner, are you thinking about something truly special for your mama? I am. And let me tell you about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? So here is how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email, and these can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you wish to ask. And then she can either type her response or record her voice. And then mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And then guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. You get to preserve her voice and her stories for your family. I mean, imagine you're discovering stories about her youth, her adventures, the challenges that she had to overcome in life, the way that you two connect and relate, and also the way her grandkids will relate to her. I mean, this book becomes a legacy and something that you and your future generations can truly treasure forever. I mean, your mom's given you a lifetime of stories, so this is your chance to give her a way to share them. And not only am I creating one for my mom now for Mother's Day, but for my dad's birthday, as my dad is turning 80 this year, and I like to gift him with sentimental gifts. You know, he's gifted my family and I so many treasured moments. So I wanted to create something for us to collect these memories and for my future kids, for them to know my father's voice. So beautiful, sentimental, easy to use. Let me emphasize, easy to use. And you can truly create one for anyone. Your mom, your dad, your bestie, maybe even you. So check out mylifeinabook.com and use code MAGIC at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com and use code MAGIC for 10% off today. As someone who is so excited to garden this spring, yet really wants top quality soil, I'm really excited to introduce you to Coast of Maine, which is an esteemed brand renowned for its organic soil offerings. And if you're seeking to infuse your home environment with a nourishing essence that promotes flourishing plant life, you're gonna wanna listen to this, because with over 28 years of expertise, Coast of Maine has meticulously crafted soils sourced from oceanic waters and farms certified for organic cultivation. It's so nice to find such a sustainable, eco-friendly brand who really emphasizes the importance of natural ingredients to enrich their soil. And I mean, they have, like I said, top quality with rigorous quality control and OMRI listed certification. Their diverse range of products caters to all gardening needs. Most of our soils may lack appropriate nutrients for success for our plants, and our plants need this. We want to regenerate the healthy microbes in our soils to set up for gardening success and just for our plants to thrive. So if we add Coast of Maine products, this will indeed help. Whether you're planting trees or shrubs or perennials in your yard, adding Coast of Maine soil in your planting holes leads to a long, slow feeding of your plants, making them self-sufficient and vibrant, which we love. Let's say you want a vegetable garden. Not only will you receive abundant harvest, but there will be less feeding and maintenance throughout the season. Amazing. You know that everything grown in Coast of Maine soil is organic and safe for your family and friends right out of the garden. And then you get to also feel good about their sourcing, as I'm so thankful they provide natural ingredients, because they will never include household waste or biosolids. And we know that nothing nurtures the world above better than the soil below, cultivated from products and practices rooted in Coast of Maine. And so they will continually perfect the art and science of sourcing, mixing, and composting products worthy of the people and the place that inspired their brand and the healthier world it was built to serve. Coast of Maine believes in nurturing relationships with local retailers. We love supporting local, and the products are carried by local retail partners who can provide advice and insight not found in big box stores. So Coast of Maine knows from beginner to expert. Anyone who takes a hand to the land has something to offer the growing community of gardeners everywhere. And their products make organic gardening simple and approachable so we can all garden. So let's get to growing. Visit coastofmaine.com to find a local retailer near you. That's Coast of Maine, like the state with an E, coastofmaine.com.
The number one thing I'm always asked in my DMs is like, I'm a one and my partner's a three, and like, how do I connect? Do we have a good relationship? Blah, blah, blah. Obviously, like, you can be involved with any Enneagram type, and there will be like some really high highs and some really low lows. And so I love to ask, like, how do we get along with them? Because there are specific needs of each type, and it's important to understand them.
Yeah. Now let the magic begin. Hello, and Jaima Yomis. It's Raquel, and I am waking up to a cold, crisp autumn morning in Park City, Utah. My heater, of course, is blasting, and I have the fireplace on in my cozy townhome since it's 30 dang degrees outside. Though, I know this is so wild and weird, because I feel like most people love hot climates. And I don't mean to talk about weather and climates right now, but you'll see. You'll see where I'm going with this. So a lot of people, of course, love to flock to warmer weather, right? You know, they usually want to visit the tropics. I mean, obviously, I do as well. However, even though I go to Bali a lot, the one thing that I did not really love there is how hot it was, because I'm somebody who loves the cold. I just went to Bali because of their spiritual vortex that's there, and it is so beautiful and nice to be around, and I love the Indonesian culture and the people. So, you know, I flock to certain tropic lands, not because of how hot it is, but seriously, because I just love the culture, the beauty, the nature, and basically the mystique of the area, usually. And of the food, especially as somebody who's plant-based and they have a lot of plant-based options, it's like heaven. Anyway, but here I am with my favorite weather, by the way. Oh, man, I've been here for a while in Park City, Utah. I've been in the States for so long. I've never settled for this long before. And I have exactly one more month with this lease in this townhome, which ends on November 11th. And I'm, you know, just I'm feeling into this decision. Do I stay here in Park City or do I go? You know, this is one of my favorite cities on Mama Earth. However, regardless, I have the bug. Many of you also may know that I have a chronic case of the travel bug, which I'm sure many of you do too. And I can just feel myself itching to fly somewhere else and stay there a while and explore. Honestly, sometimes, as our human mind likes to point out flaws that honestly aren't even flaws, but one of mine that my mind will go to and I have to shift is my mind gives me a hard time sometimes that I struggle to settle and stay put. Now, before anyone lectures me on saying certain words, of course, I am sharing my truth and the human experience as well, so other people may relate and they can consciously shift their perspective as well. So my mind does tend to point out flaws that aren't even flaws, such as me not staying put and always wanting to travel. And how in the world is that a flaw? I don't know. But the mind will create it to be, right? So, of course, I consciously shift it to honor that aspect of myself, because what's wrong with being someone who has a chronic travel bug? I don't know. But even when I'm not solo traveling, I do often feel pulled to explore out in nature or go on long drives and procrastinate what I really need to do for making a living or for the podcast or for whatever else. And that's something that I recognize. And I definitely, when I do recognize that I'm procrastinating because I don't want to face something or whatever, it's not easy, but I do pull myself together to sit and settle and focus. I do feel better, especially when I know something's just gotta be done, you know? Anyway, there's a little insight to my mind as well as most every human's mind who points out flaws that aren't even flaws. In fact, we're really not that flawed of beings, or maybe we are, but why not honor these quote-unquote supposed flaws? Anyway, around this time of year, last year, I took the Enneagram test for the very first time. In fact, I just found out what it was, which apparently a lot of people were aware of this, like they are with Myers-Briggs, which my Myers-Briggs is an INFP. And the Enneagram test was new to me, and it seemed like everybody but myself knew what it was. I remember when I talked about it on the podcast, I got so many messages of people telling me what their Enneagram is and also sharing with me what they thought I was, which, by the way, when I took a test online and it was free, I got a 7. And many things did stand out and a few things didn't resonate. Kind of like when I read about the Leo. So this is before I knew about the whole full comprehensive birth chart in astrology. Well, then the same thing happened when I looked at my Enneagram, which was a 7 on this free test. And I was like, ooh, a lot of this deeply resonates, but some things do not. Especially since they're supposedly most likely an extrovert, and I am 100% an introvert. 100%. So, you know, I read it and I kind of dismissed it for a bit, but for whatever reason, it kept popping up. One of the former guests, Dana Max, she recommended that I have Enneagram Ashton on, which is today's guest, by the way. Before I chatted with her, seriously, like 2 hours before I chatted with her, I figured, hey, I might as well take an actual test and see. So I paid $60 for the integrative test, and again, I landed a 7. So then a few hours go by, and it is time to chat with Ashton Whitmoyer-Ober, aka Enneagram Ashton, on the Instagram and on the webs, and learn more not only about sevens but all the other types to see which one resonates. Honestly, because of the types and their connection with their wing type and their main challenges and motivations, their strength lines and growth lines, which Ashton talks about in this episode, 7 does make a lot of sense, and also a little bit of 4 as well. And so I told Ashton that I took a test, yet she recommended, yeah, sure, take a test, but as you delve deeper into the Enneagram, you may notice that you actually are another type than what the test suggests. So it's a great guiding point, but of course, all you have to do is read about the 9 types and you'll just know. However, she did recommend, if you do take the test, take the Riso Hudson Enneagram test, which I will link in the show notes. But again, you know, take the test, especially maybe not pay $60, but the free test or something, and just delve deeper and you really will just know. So, during this chat, I declare I'm a 7 and I also still feel like a 7 and perhaps with a 6 wing, I still intend to actually dive a little deeper before I'm like, I am 1000% a 7, even as a pretty extreme introvert. Anyway, I'm really excited for you to hear from the brilliant mind of Ashton, who is a writer, a public speaker, community psychologist, and a certified Enneagram coach. And she's a type 2 Enneagram, which is the helper. And she'll talk a lot about that in this episode as well, along with all the others, of course. And she shares all things of the Enneagram on her site, EnneagramAshton.com, and also her Instagram at EnneagramAshton, which of course is linked in the show notes. I know you will receive some gold and hear a little whisper of which one you potentially are. Feel free to take the free test that she recommends by pausing this and looking in the show notes. It's, again, the Riso Hudson test, Enneagram type indicator test. So the RHETI, which is the world's most popular Enneagram based test. So with all of that being said, ooh, one more thing. You guys, this is the week that EuroMagic is celebrating her 3rd anniversary, which is on the 16th. So I will be releasing an episode this Friday, the 16th, to celebrate the 3rd anniversary. And also on the episode, I will share who last week's giveaway winner was, which I'm sure you're very curious. And simply celebrate 3 years. 4 million downloads, and we're approaching 200 episodes. I believe this one is 193 or 194 or something. So what? I'm so excited and just beyond grateful for our strong and deeply soul-connected community, our tribe, our siblinghood. I cannot emphasize how grateful I am for all of you. And also, if you're new, feel free to connect with other like-minded beings in the Your Own Magic Facebook group. If you have Facebook, it is a very engaging and loving atmosphere. Anyway, this has been a long introduction, so I'll read some of the reviews for Friday's episode, along with talk about a surprise with exclusive podcast content that is coming soon. So, without further ado, because that was a lot of ado, I believe it is time to let the magic begin with Enneagram Ashton. What's your type? What's your Enneagram?
I'm 2, so I'm the helper.
I love that. Then you're definitely in an amazing position or career for you, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Well, what lights you up most in this season of your life?
I guess just like being able to be supportive to people, because it is a weird season for everybody. And so being able to assist them in what they need and helping them like get through such a weird, unprecedented, I know that's like a buzzword these days, but
it's so true though.
Yeah.
Like, how else are you going to describe it except for chaotic?
Yeah, for sure.
Your specialty is the Enneagram. Now, how in the world did you get into this and why?
Yeah, so I have my bachelor's degree in psychology as well as my master's degree in psych. So personality typing systems have always been like a part of my life. I even remember being 11, 12 years old, having my mom taking me to a bookstore and like hightailing it to the psychology section, because I was always just interested in learning more and about, well, how to like, you know myself and helping people and things like that, that kind of fit into my wheelhouse. But what was always missing was, okay, I have this knowledge and this information, but what do I do with it now? And so when I discovered the Enneagram and I saw that it was, you know, kind of that next step of, it's not about behavior traits, it's about the motivations behind why you're doing the things that you're doing. And so it no longer was like, this is who you are, it's this is why you do those things. And so that really intrigued me. And then also that you can use the Enneagram as a tool to not just understand yourself better, but to understand other people and why they do things the way that they do. And so if something's like annoying you, or you're trying to figure out like why that person is so vastly different from you, then even just having the simple knowledge of the Enneagram can be super beneficial.
And you have more compassion for just understanding that people are so different and they have their different, like you said, motivation behind all things. And so you understand why they do what they do. I am so new to understanding the Enneagram. First, how can people find their type if they want to pause this and figure out which type they are and then continue on?
Yeah, tests are like a great place to start, but it's really hard for a test to get at your true motivations. Sometimes they only really cover like those behaviors. So for example, like you being a 7, like your biggest motivation is to experience freedom and you know, like be satisfied and content in everything that you're doing, and you fear like missing out and being trapped in emotional pain and things like that. Whereas like the behaviors of that could look like you wanting to travel all the time, wanting to experience new things, you know? So I, as a two, could also want to experience new things and also have an inability sitting still, but my motivations for that are going to be different than yours.
Ah, okay.
So with that being said, the best way to, like, take a test, sure, by all means, take a test, but don't end there. Like, the Enneagram is a complex tool and a complex system, and so it is really on you to do the research, do the work. You know, we're humans and we want quick fixes and we want to take a test and have them tell us our type and then that's it, right? And mm-hmm. we live through life knowing that that's our type, but most of the time it requires a little bit of extra knowledge, information, learning to really see if those motivations and fears and desires sit with us.
Yeah.
Well, so I always say, like, look at, you know, what those things are and see if it resonates with you and then go from there.
Okay. So it's also possible that that could change in time.
So your Enneagram type is your type from a very young age. And so, like, what can cause you to mistype then is, like, life experiences or if you've gone through trauma and you know, like, have developed coping mechanisms or things like that. And it can blur, you know, why you're doing the things that you're doing. Are you doing that because that is your main motivation or because you were taught to respond that way? Sometimes, like, those different things can come in and make it confusing. And that's why it takes a little bit more research than just taking a test.
Makes so much sense. And that's why it's nice to work with someone like you who probably psychoanalyzes them. I don't know, but then you really figure it out.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's go through 1 through 9 and talk about each type and their motivation behind all things and maybe their challenges and strengths.
Yeah, that sounds good. So I'm going to use the names of the types from the Enneagram Institute. A lot of different people and experts have, like, used their own names or titles. And so if you hear them called other things, it's not wrong. It's just that I'm going to use the ones from the Enneagram Institute. Cool. So the 1 is the reformer. And so what did you say for me to describe about
that? Oh, yeah, their motivation behind all things or their challenges and strengths. But if you have a normal spiel where you just go through them, feel free to just share that as well.
Okay, so yeah, the 1 is the reformer. And so they are afraid of being seen as bad, evil, or wrong, and, like, irresponsible and condemned, like, things like that. And their biggest desire is to have integrity, to be right, to be good. And a lot of people struggle with, like, what does that mean to, like, want to be seen as good? And it's really, like, they want to be considered that, like, good person, right? Like, people look at them and they know that they're a good person.
That, okay. I wonder if I, because I have an idea of, are you familiar with Human Design at all?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So I wonder if some people that are maybe manifesting generators or reflectors could even be ones.
Yeah, for sure.
That's interesting. Oh, and that also brings up another quick question. So even though you're a 2, does the 1 kind of bleed in as well?
Yeah. So your wings are on either side of your main type. A lot of people get confused because they feel like their wing is just their second highest score if they've taken a test. And that can be true if, like, your second highest score was a number right next to you. But your wing does have to be on either side, just like wings are, you know?
Yeah.
So, for example, like, 9s could have an 8 wing or a 1 wing. Uh-huh. 1s would have a 9 or a 2. 2s would have 1 or 3, and so on and so forth. The point of the wings is you can take on some of those behavior traits or those characteristics of your wings while your motivation will continue to lie in the Enneagram type that you identify with the most. And so it's more about, like, outward characteristics, behaviors versus, you know, like, that need for me, like, that need to be seen as good because I'm a 2. But, like, I do find myself exhibiting some of those qualities of, like, wanting what's fair and what's right to happen and people to follow rules, things like that.
Right, right. People to follow rules. That's kind of like the opposite of me. But so, yeah, the fair and the, yeah, that's so interesting. Okay. And then, well, also when I was reading other Enneagram types, it's like, oh, I can relate to that. So of course there's pieces you can relate to with probably each of them.
Right. Yeah, definitely. It's just where do your main motivations come in and lie.
For sure. For sure. So then let's talk about you then too.
Yeah. So the twos are the helper.
Mm-hmm.
They fear being unloved, worthless, being seen as needy or unwanted. And their biggest desire is to be loved, wanted, but mostly appreciated. So they do the things that they're doing. They, do all those good deeds and are really helpful, but they want that appreciation and to be wanted because of those things.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So the helper, and that's why you've probably at a young age were so interested in psychology. Like how many kids that are potentially twos are interested in psychology?
Like, let me just understand everybody. So, we can help everybody in the world.
Oh my gosh, that's so adorable. Wait, so then when you were young, you wanted to be a psychologist so you can help people out?
When I was young, I originally thought I wanted to be a teacher. But when I took a psychology class in high school, I was like, oh no, this is more my speed, because I really like that seeking to understand people, which is really what the Enneagram is all about, is like if we are seeking to understand these qualities, the Enneagram types of like our friends, our family members, our partners, then we are seeking to understand what motivates them and to better our relationships.
That makes sense. So then also, is one a perfectionist?
Yeah, so they can also be called the perfectionist. Okay. And that's because of their need for things to be like right.
Right. And that's your wing as a two.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And then so how about three?
Yeah, so I actually have a way stronger three wing.
Ah.
Is the achiever. And their biggest desire is to be seen as successful, efficient, valuable. They want to be admired, but they mostly want to be respected.
Mm.
Whereas their biggest fears are typically being a failure, being seen as incompetent, worthless, inefficient, all of those things, and then not being respected. And so the main difference between twos and threes is that twos really just want to be loved. Mm-hmm. And threes really just want to be respected.
Okay. I wonder if, well, I feel as though if the U.S. were a type, it potentially could be a three.
That's a really good point.
Well, congrats, because you also are perceived as very successful and also very admired. So your wing is probably very happy in that sense.
You know, it's a battle, though. Like, threes really struggle with who they are. And because of like who they perceive others want them to be.
Right.
So they're often known as like the chameleon. So they can shift who they need to be when they're around certain people.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh my gosh. I wonder if threes are the type that could easily be blurry. You know what I mean? When they take the test.
Mm-hmm.
Because.
Oh yeah, for sure. Because they can like see themselves in all of them because they've taken on different roles.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So threes are really like role driven. So they like, well, this is how I am when I'm at work. This is how I am when I'm with family. You know, this is how I am when I'm with my friends, things like that.
So then what do you think one and two, their greatest challenges, if that's threes?
Yeah, for twos, they definitely can be a little overbearing at times or like overly accommodating.
Mm.
So they can, you know, insert themselves where they're not needed, or, you know, just that type of person who like continues to ask, are you mad at me? Are you mad at me? And then the person ends up being mad at them because they keep asking. Mm-hmm. And then ones, you know, they can sometimes get in trouble with their judgment and criticism. Most of the time, their inner critic like is about them, where they're like judging themselves. They have this desire to like improve and to be better. But when they turn that criticism and judgment outward and think that other people need to be doing things the way that they're doing them.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah, that I can see some people as that for sure. This is all so interesting. And also, I want to honor you as a two for knowing your own self boundaries when it comes to like honoring your energy. You know, for example, as with the email thing, I genuinely was like, she probably is, you know, overwhelmed or something, but doesn't really answer emails unless she has to. Because I know a lot of people like that. And I think that's great that people honor those boundaries instead of having to feel like they have to people please. Like, I'll even sometimes not answer emails. So yeah, I want to honor you as a two for doing that for yourself.
So honestly, like, there are a lot of things that don't fit with me as a two because I've done the work.
Uh-huh. Right? So,
like, I, as a big stereotype for twos is that they don't know how to recognize their own needs because they're only recognizing the needs of others. And I've done a lot of work around that where, like, that's a non issue for me because I'm able to say, like, no, I need to do this for myself. I need to, like, go get a massage. I need to take a day off, like, things like that. Without feeling guilty. Not does the guilt like creep in sometimes, absolutely, but you know, like, it is part of setting boundaries, and I definitely struggle with boundaries and saying no, and like, I want to help everybody, and so I try to arrange my schedule and, like, you know, do things like that, but it's definitely, you know, it's part of that self-growth.
That is amazing. And doing the work, I think that's probably going to be key for everybody when they learn their type and they know their challenges or what they need to work on. And then you can really honor yourself more when you do the work. And when you say do the work, do you mean like just do the inner work and, you know, finding out where your challenges are and what you can do to best honor yourself type thing?
That's definitely a part of it. I think, you know, it's great. People love to hear the great things that they are, like the great things about their type.
Yeah.
And then when they get to the unhealthy qualities, they're like, whoa, wait, like that isn't me.
Right.
And we're human, right? And we're like, that's not, you know, I don't see myself. And so if we're able to like really sit with some of those unhealthy qualities and understand why, so like understand those motivations, like I talked about, like, why am I doing this? I can like give you a real life example for me where I have just constantly been that person in my family who is always helping. Like, I'm pregnant right now, but I'm the only one that doesn't have kids at the moment. And so I'm always like the one that watches all the kids, helps everybody move, sees what everybody needs, you know, like recognizes all of those things. And when it comes to like, who's doing this for me? That like over the years has built resentment, right? Where I'm like, I'm doing all of these amazing things for people. Like, why aren't they reciprocating that? And that is really like a point of contention for twos when they need to have like that heart check of, well, why am I doing these things? Like, am I doing these things to just have that be reciprocated? Or am I doing these things because I genuinely want to help out the people that I care about most? And so for me, like, that was a light bulb moment of that self-growth of, okay, I'm doing this out of like me loving these kids, loving my family, and I just want to help out. And understanding that not everybody is like me and going to want to do that, and everyone's busy, and that's okay.
I'm sure so many people can relate to that as well, whether they're a two or not, but especially two. That's beautiful that you're able to see that and also have compassion for the others. That is hard when someone doesn't reciprocate what you're giving or what you're gifting. Do you ever feel taken advantage of constantly as somebody who does love to help?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, but that's part of like, you know, building those boundaries and why to struggle with that, because like for me, I like recognize when I feel that way, and then I set firm boundaries.
Yeah.
So that I don't have to feel that way, you know?
So powerful and beautiful. And I'm sure you know a lot of the boundaries that each type does often have to set. Basically, your challenges or each type challenges is kind of often their shadow or their like predominant shadows to really face.
Yeah.
Ooh, this one's interesting to me. Four.
Yeah. So the four is called the individualist. Sometimes it's called the romantic. And their biggest desire is to really just be seen as unique, special, significant. They really value authenticity and transparency and things like that. Where their biggest fear is being seen as inadequate or like just like everybody else, mm-hmm. or even like the black sheep them, and that they're emotionally cut off.
Oh, okay. So then what is their biggest challenge?
So sometimes they're the most emotional type on the Enneagram. And so sometimes they can really be weighed down by those emotions. Now, fours typically do like to sit with their emotions, and that's not really what I'm talking about. But when they're not able to like recover from sitting with their emotions, where they're just internalizing everything, over-processing, becoming withdrawn, depressed, self-absorbed, things like that.
Right. I wonder if some of the greatest artists in the world were fours.
Oh, I'm sure. For sure.
For sure, probably.
Like fours are known to be creative too. And so that's sometimes people get caught up with that if they don't feel like they're creative. But that piece is definitely there where they can be a little eccentric and, you know, different and creative and really just have that kind of style.
I wonder what happens when a parent is like a one and then their child is a four.
Yeah.
Or maybe an eight even.
Well, interesting. Yeah. I mean, we didn't talk about the stress or the growth lines either. But, you know, every type has a number that they go to when they're stressed. And every type has a number that they go to when they're in growth. So ones, when they're stressed, take on some of those unhealthy qualities of a four. And so they'd be able to relate to those qualities for sure.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay. Ooh. Okay. So we'll go through all the types, then we'll talk about the stress and growth. I like that. That's interesting. So then a five.
So the five is the investigator. And so I always call them like the walking Google search engine because they just love to gain knowledge. So the biggest desire is to be competent, capable, knowledgeable, all of those things. And then their biggest fear is to be seen as like ignorant or incapable, or even having like their space invaded on. They're really strict with their boundaries, whereas like other types aren't. They're really strict with their boundaries and are afraid of having people like invade their personal space.
Okay. So what is their greatest challenge?
Their greatest challenge is sometimes they can be perceived as know-it-alls, right? Like, I'm the only one that knows before. I'm the only one that knows how to do this, things like that. But they also really, you know, internalize everything and can put up such strong walls that they keep people out. And so a lot of times when people are talking about fives or their relationships with fives, they say that they have a difficult time communicating. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes they just don't know the words to say or don't know how to effectively express what they're trying to get across.
It's so interesting when you're talking about these types. I've always have somebody in mind, like who this could potentially be. Yeah. And I'm sure that as you meet people, you're probably like, do you get a vibe from people right away what type they are now that you just know this so in-depthly?
Sometimes I do. You know, it's difficult because at the end of the day, I don't know people's like main motivations for doing things.
For sure.
But like when I'm talking to people, it's typically, it doesn't, you know, it's not difficult.
Right. Fair enough. Okay. Yeah. How about six?
So six's biggest desire, six's is the loyalist, sorry. And they're often known on the Enneagram as the one that like deals with the most anxiety. And I like hate that people have associated that word anxiety with the sixes because it really looks like self-doubt, worry, worst case scenario thinking, things like that. And then it makes it confusing for people who do struggle with generalized anxiety disorder because they feel like, well, if I have anxiety, then I must be a type six. Or, you know, it makes it so that that's the biggest stereotype for sixes and then other things about them aren't celebrated. So just a little tidbit, if you do have anxiety and you feel like you don't connect to the six, then that's totally fine as well. But the biggest desire for a six is to have support, guidance, and security, and honestly, just to feel safe. Mm. And so they typically fear, like fear itself. They have that connection where they just are afraid and they fear fear, but they also fear being without that support, guidance, or security.
So they really value relationships, it sounds like, too, to feel more grounded, I guess.
Yeah,
because of course every single type deals with anxiety. I mean, that's part of being human, right? But I'm sure that they have, like you, when it comes to honoring your boundaries in your ways, I wonder how they can honor themselves and their boundaries and also alleviate a lot of that extreme anxiety.
Right. Yeah.
Are there practical ways
for them to alleviate their anxiety?
Yeah.
They need to really practice focusing on the here and now. Mm. Instead of the past, instead of the future, focus on what they can control in this moment instead of thinking about all of the things that could happen.
Okay. So, and not be like a futurist, because I like to think about the future a lot, but that mm-hmm. probably gives them more anxiety.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure. And that's one of my wings, I guess, too, the whole fear thing. And I do have experience anxiety for sure from time to time. So yeah, that's interesting. And then seven
is, of course, the enthusiast. They're also called like the optimist, things like that. Their biggest desire is, like I said, to have fun, to be content, to be satisfied. And so that's why they're constantly, you know, doing the things that they're doing or experiencing new things, because they're looking for that contentment.
Uh-huh.
Whereas their biggest fear is, of course, FOMO, missing out on things, being bored, but also being trapped in emotional pain. And so they bury the pain, they bury the anxiety, and go do the things that they want to do so that they don't have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This makes a lot of sense. but I've gotten to a place where I know that when I notice when I am indeed procrastinating my emotions and not allowing myself to feel. But I mean, this has been for the past few years. I'm like, okay, now I've got to experience how I'm feeling and be completely honest with myself.
Yeah, for sure.
But what are the greatest challenges and, I guess, in a sense, weaknesses of the seven?
Yeah, so sevens often, because they're always on the go, they don't know how to slow down. Mm-hmm. They can become restless or self-focused or even like impulsive mm-hmm. and also scattered. And so really it has to do with, like, again, being in the present, being able to slow down, recognizing what you actually need or what you actually want to do instead of just trying to do it all.
For sure. I'm definitely a very scattered person, but I definitely, especially during this year especially, I've really slowed down, but it's also probably because of the energies of this year. Mm-hmm. They're kind of asking everybody to slow down.
Yep.
Which is interesting. But yeah, this is good. I love it. Okay, so eight.
So eights are the challenger. Their biggest desire is to protect themselves and others. So they're really protective of themselves, and then protective of like the underdog and things like that. Their biggest fear is that they're going to be seen as weak or powerless, and control is huge for them. So they don't like to be controlled. They prefer to be in control.
I can see how this is a wing. what is their greatest challenge?
So their greatest challenge is when they turn that assertiveness into aggressiveness, right? And so like, being assertive is great, being aggressive and a bully, not so much. And so sometimes, because if they feel like they're losing control, then they can become insensitive and domineering and aggressive towards other people.
Ooh, how do they recognize, because it sounds like they might have, do they have a hard time seeing this, their flaw?
Yeah, I would say, you know, the eights that are able to recognize this have definitely done the work.
Okay. So then how can they, when they do the work or as they're doing the work, how do they prevent themselves or just bring awareness to when they're feeling more aggressive, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult, but what I always say, people always think the eights are yelling, right? And they're like, you know, they raise their voice sometimes because of that passion. Mm-hmm. And so part of like recognizing when you go to for all of the types, when you go to that unhealthy side of your type, is what got you there? Like, how did you get there? Why are you there? Are you feeling like you're out of control? And then almost like working backwards to deconstruct that.
This is so interesting. I feel like my dad is for sure an eight. He's so fiery, passionate about whatever he believes in, but he can't help. And I'll tell him to calm down. He's like, I can't help it. But it's like in the most passionate way, but at the same time, yeah, he's a lot. He's a very passionate, fiery person. And so this is very interesting. How about the nine?
And then the nine is the peacemaker. And so their biggest desire is to have internal stability and peace of mind. And that's because their biggest fear is conflict. Mm-hmm. So again, not like other types don't fear conflict. It's just that it makes up the nine's like core way of being and what motivates them for all of those behaviors.
And so I can see how a wing for theirs would be one, because it sounds somewhat similar in a sense, but very different at the same time, because I don't know how much one fears conflict. What is their greatest challenge then?
So then their greatest challenge is, because they fear conflict so much, they have a difficult time like making decisions because of the potential conflict, or, you know, stating their own opinions because afraid of conflict, you know, like all of different things. And so then they can just become like passive aggressive. They bury things and don't want to address them and kind of keep them to themselves because they're so afraid of what will happen if they share it.
So how can they honor themselves then when they feel this, I guess, trigger of a conflict is about to arise, yet they also need to learn to not be afraid to stand up or be themselves?
It's really difficult. It really is a struggle for nines. And what they really need is other people to encourage them to voice their opinion, to stand up for themselves, to, you know, like make decisions, and that it's okay to do so, like almost giving them permission to be who they want to be.
Dude, I feel like my mom is a nine. Oh my God. It's so interesting too, because my dad is a total eight. He's just super passionately fiery. Then my mom's a nine and she like does not want to deal with that conflict, where she just, you know, when he gets that way, she likes to just walk away and not deal with whatever he's getting crazy about. It's so interesting. Well, and the thing is, I don't fully know, you know, obviously, but you say these things, and I'm sure that there's so much more depth to each type, where I might initially think that someone I know is a certain way, yet of course as we dive deeper it could be completely different.
Right.
Our interruption, just a very brief interruption to talk about and thank our sponsor of this episode, who you've heard me talk about probably 444 times by now, but Hum Nutrition has been a loyal sponsor since pretty much day uno, and they are helping millions with one of our greatest assets, our physical vessel. If you didn't know, Hum was actually birthed from founders that were struggling with skin and other breakouts. After doing everything that the doctor prescribed and trying out all the different lotions and yada yada, they just really wanted to find something that was a bit more natural, more pure, but also very high quality. And that is where Hum was born, initially for the skin, but they have branched out to help a variety of other problems or conditions, such as gut issues, like their Gut Instinct supplement, which I have definitely used many times, as it contains 10 strain probiotics, 25 billion organisms, and provides 30 vegan capsules for a 30-day supply. But there are a variety of other supplements as well that people love to go to, and of course many of them are vegan. One of their more popular ones, which I also enjoy, is their Flatter Me Pill, which helps decrease the bloating and break down the proteins and carbs and fiber and fats and lactose, I guess, is if you eat that, to help you digest, because it's a blend of digestive enzymes, including ginger and fennel and peppermint. And I talk about these because for me, my gut had always been my greatest issue. But again, there are a variety of other ones, such as hair, skin, nails, metabolism, sleep, and aging. But one thing that I really appreciate is that they connect you with a free personal nutritionist before you even choose one, so that way you can choose the right micronutrient to support whatever your beautiful vessel needs. And I know there are people from all over the world that listen to this podcast, so they don't only deliver to America. Wherever you're at, they likely serve. So go to humnutrition.com and enter the promo code MAGIC, M-A-G-I-C, for 20% off. That's humnutrition.com, promo code MAGIC. And now enjoy the rest of this episode. I'm curious about a few things. Obviously the stress and growth lines, but also what each can do to thrive in life.
Yeah, so in stress, each type goes to the unhealthy qualities of their stress line. So for nines, they take on the unhealthy qualities of a six. For ones, they go to four. Twos, they go to eight. Threes, they go to nine. Fours, they go to two. Fives go to seven. Sixes go to three. Sevens go to one. And then eights go to five.
Aha, uh-huh, that makes sense. Wait, what does nine go to again?
Nine goes to six when they're stressed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, when we're stressed, yes, when I'm stressed, the one. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And then how about the growth?
So then when they're like really, really healthy or growing or like moving to a good place, the nine is going to go to the three. The one is going to go to the seven. Twos go to four. Threes go to six. Fours go to one. Fives go to eight. Six goes to nine. Seven goes to five. Mm-hmm. And then eight goes to two.
I wonder if, do you know when it comes to astrology, south and north nodes?
I don't. I unfortunately know the bare minimum. Okay.
That's fine. But the south and north nodes, well, then we don't have to get into it too much. But it sounds, I wonder if it's somewhat similar. Like the north is kind of like what you're striving for in this life. I guess your soul or just yourself, your self-expression, like what you're really striving to be and want to accomplish. And then the south is what you already are innately, but also some people interpret it as what might hold you back in some way. So kind of like a stress line or what you revert to when you are not in your authentic self.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so how about what can each do to thrive? Are there certain careers, you know, I'm just curious so we can really embrace and give the best advice for each type.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously it's different for each type. The ones, like, they really just need to take the time to slow down. They always feel like there are things that they should be doing. A lot of times ones feel like they aren't able to do fun things or like aren't able to relax because they need to constantly be improving themselves. And so they are really good at being teachers because they're great at like teaching these things and they're self-disciplined, but they need to remember how to slow down as well.
Okay, cool. How about you?
I know, it's always awkward when I talk about So for twos who have a hard time expressing their own needs, need to be really aware of what they need in life, because they will experience severe burnout, right? If they just are continuing to give and not taking care of themselves. Also, like I said before, like they need to recognize their own motives for why they're doing all of those good deeds.
Okay. How do they do that? How can they recognize their own motives?
Just really having like that heart check and say like, why am I doing this? You know, like, is this something that I really want to do? Do I feel obligated to do this? Am I doing this because I want something reciprocated? Like really just questioning those things.
Oh, I feel like every type would benefit from the heart check.
Yes, for sure.
Is there a type that has a harder time tuning into the heart and soul?
Eights and fives.
Interesting. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. How about three?
So threes really need to take the time to explore who they are when they're not doing. Mm-hmm. So like, who are they when they're not a mom? Who are they when they're not a CEO of a company? Who are they when they're not, you know, this friend to this person? And to like kind of eliminate those roles and be able to stand on their own and say, this is me, this is who I am.
Awesome. How about four?
For fours, they need to, you know, like obviously they do a really good job of recognizing their emotions and things like mm-hmm. that. But they need to learn how to recognize other people's emotions as well. So, you know, they're good at like paying attention to their own feelings, but pay attention to trying to understand others' feelings as well. And like really work on developing their self-esteem and their self-confidence and being they value authenticity, but being true to who they are as well.
Okay. So when they are feeling a lack of self-confidence in some way, what are tools they can start to implement in order to appreciate themselves?
Yeah. So I always, you know, like look at the characteristics that other people enjoy about you, right? Like that's important to fours. It's important to a lot of the types, but other people's opinions are important to fours. And so look at those things and, you know, obviously they said them for a reason. Obviously they feel them for a reason. and learn that, you know, just how valuable you are. And because, you know, fours really struggle with feeling like they aren't significant. And so, again, sometimes it takes relying on other people to find your significance.
Yeah. And they're basically your other people are your messengers to show you where you are and also can help you see how amazing you are. So I love that.
Yeah.
Number five.
Yeah. So for fives, they need to recognize how much time they're actually spending in their head. And so, which is fine, right? That they spend so much time in their head, but then that can also disconnect them from others. And so, like I said, they do withdraw, they do retreat and things like that. But oftentimes, because they're not explaining it to other people, people don't understand. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, being open to learning about how other people are feeling can even, you know, just be super impactful for developing communication.
For sure. How about sixes?
Yeah, so I talked about this a little bit, but like focusing on what you can control, because they do tend to, you know, spiral into that worst case scenario thinking, or, you know, the worry, the self-doubt. And so just remembering that, like, it's normal to feel anxious and, you know, there's not something wrong with you because you're feeling that way. But, you know, be truly present and focus on what you can control in that moment and what you can do about it to prevent it from happening in the future.
Do sixes experience a lot of paralysis in life when it comes to moving forward and taking on what they really want to do?
Yeah, for sure. Because they like to stick with the comfy cozy. So they have a hard time like getting out of their comfort box.
Do they dream though of what they really want?
That's a really good question. I'm sure some do, but I'm sure that others don't, because they can be debilitated by their fear.
Right. Well, the thing that makes me sad is to think if one has this wild, beautiful dream, yet they might be a six and they are just paralyzed by moving forward because they don't really believe in themselves. So is there like another tool or something they can do to really see how worthy they are of whatever they want to pursue?
You know, it's part of that like self-development growth and really recognizing who you are and all of those like really great qualities that you do have inside of you that have nothing to do with feeling anxious.
Mm, yeah. How about seven?
Are you sure?
Yeah, I can take it. I can take it. Let me get a sip of water. I can take it.
So it's really important for sevens to, again, I talked about this a little bit, but to slow down, to recognize what they're trying to run away from. So because they're constantly, you know, on the go or trying to experience new things, go on new adventures, most of the time they're running away. And so it's important for sevens to recognize that impulsiveness, to observe why you might be acting that way and focus on what's at the root of that.
Yeah, when I find myself procrastinating or distracting from things that I dream a lot about amazing things that I want to do. And when I see myself distracting myself from doing all of that, even this year, as I'm mostly staying grounded in this one city, which is so weird for me, I do also find myself, I'll go outside for a long time on nature trail because I want to stay away from my computer and away from work. And I'm like, what am I really running from? So yeah. I think that's key, because I do. I'll tend to tell myself, you know what, it's just so beautiful outside. I'm going to go on a long hike or a long walk, or I'm going to go on a long drive and not do what I'm supposed to do.
That's totally.
Oh, man. But I've gotten to a place, obviously, where I like recognize it. But sometimes it's still hard for me to make myself do it, even if I recognize it.
I am an everyday a touch of mascara kind of gal, though I love a full glam moment. So whether I'm simply just adding my Liquid Lash Extensions mascara by Thrive Cosmetics or adding their highlighter, eyeliner, or eyeshadow to my full glam, Thrive has been my go-to since 2020 for most of my makeup products. So that's why I'm so excited that they're sponsoring this episode. And why do I love them? Well, not only is their quality and their application just chef's kiss, but also the causes they support. In fact, it's in the name, Thrive Cosmetics, C C-A-U-S-E, Medics. Thrive Cosmetics and Bigger Than Beauty Skincare exist to empower their customers, employees, and giving partners to live their most confident lives. And so they believe in responsive giving. And so thanks to your support, they either donate their high performance products or much needed funds to help communities thrive. Can't emphasize enough how great their mascara is. Their unique formula creates tubes around each eyelash to lengthen them. Plus, it's incredibly easy to remove. Just a gentle wash with warm water, and it doesn't leave any smudges. The nourishing ingredients also support longer, stronger, and healthier looking lashes over time. And let me tell you, as someone with blonde eyebrows, I really do appreciate the natural look of their Infinity Waterproof Eyebrow Liner. This easy-to-use waterproof pencil holds like a wax and blends like a powder. So just a few strokes to the line of your brows and fill in any sparse areas, and it comes with a little spoolie brush to lift and tame your brows afterwards. So with 8 shades to choose from, you'll always find the perfect match for your natural brow hair color. Refresh your everyday look with Thrive Cosmetics, luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 10% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/magic. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/magic for 10% off your first order.
And then 8.
So 8, they, remember I said like they, where they can get in trouble is it was with that aggressiveness. And so like definitely recognizing that, but also to remember that like the world isn't against them. And so many people are, you know, wanting to support them, and sometimes they set too strong boundaries and you know, leave people out and alienate them and things like that. And so really just having those realizations of who is with you and who is against you, because I think that they would be surprised that so many people are with them and that it's okay to depend on them at times if you need to, whereas 8 feel like they can't depend on anybody.
See, as we go deeper, I told you I'll probably change my mind because my dad thinks everybody likes him, which might not always be true, but he does. But that's really tough for someone to think that the world is against them. Are there certain exercises or something they can do to acknowledge that, you know, they are a lovable person and worthy of people's love and people do actually appreciate them?
The biggest exercise, I think, is just to listen. And sometimes 8s have a problem with listening in general because they are so loud and passionate, yeah. Right? So like if they are the loudest voice in the room, they have trouble listening to other people. So I think just that act of like seeking to understand and listening can be really helpful.
It sounds like listening could be one of their greatest challenges for sure.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. How about 9s?
So for 9s, you know, they fear conflict. And so they have to really learn how to stand on their own and, you know, assert themselves and be independent and voice their own opinions and have those, you know, have their desires addressed and things like that. And it's really, really hard, but, you know, it's important to do that work to develop your self-esteem and your confidence in that even if there is that conflict that comes your way because of that, that it'll be okay and you'll get through it.
Yeah. I think that 9s are so beautiful to have around, even though what I hope that they do is honor themselves. Right. But I do think they're so beautiful to have around just for that peace.
Yeah, for sure.
So for each type, I'm debating whether we first talk about, yeah, we'll do this. How do we get along or just find compassion for each type?
Yeah. So for getting along is, well, the number one thing I'm always asked in my DMs is like, I'm a 1 and my partner's a 3 and like, how do I connect? Or yeah. Like, do we have a good relationship? Blah, blah, blah. So, obviously, like, you can be involved with any Enneagram type, and there will be, like, some really high highs and some really low lows. And so I love to ask, like, how do we get along with them? Because there are specific needs of each type, and it's important to understand them.
Yeah.
For 1s, you know, like, you have to think about what they really care about. So they care about fairness and rules and being considerate. And so showing that you also care about those things and being honest, keeping your word, reminding them to slow down and have fun, and that, you know, the chores will be there when we get back from doing this activity.
Mm-hmm. And two.
So for twos, words are really important to them. So,
okay,
you know, telling them that you appreciate them, tell them what you love about them, being gentle with criticism, like the sandwich method is really important, where you, you know, tell them amazing things about them, insert the criticism, and then follow up with how they're doing a good job.
Well, I deeply appreciate you being here, first of all.
Like I said, and weird talking about my type.
I can see you like blushing for sure. You're like, oh. How about, but yeah, that makes sense. So would two's love language basically be words of affirmation?
Like, I have not met a two that has not enjoyed words of affirmation.
Ooh, that would be an interesting one to go through each potential love types as well, love language. Well, I guess we could integrate that with this question. So what do you think one's first love language is?
You know, it's difficult because immediately I would say acts of service. Mm. But, you know, they can also be very particular with how they like things done. Mm-hmm. And so I think like the offering of the act of service, like they appreciate offer, but then at the end of the day they want to do it themselves because they can do it the right way.
Yeah, they want the bed made a certain way. Yeah. No, it's sweet, you're doing it, honey. It's just, you know, tuck the cover under this way. I get it. That's funny. Yeah. So then words of, well, I can see acts of service for two then as well.
Yeah, for sure. And quality time.
Yeah. Honestly, probably all of them. Yeah. Like just love. The gifts, everything.
Yeah. Love all of them.
Number, how about threes then?
So for threes, how to get along with them, you know, you need to be able to celebrate their successes and their achievements and show them respect. Remember, respect is really important. Giving them honest feedback and just being honest really about, you know, everything with them. For threes with the love languages, I would definitely say quality time. Threes tend to be a little bit more social, and so they value the time spent with people.
Aww. That's sweet. How about four?
So for fours, to get along with them, they also value, I would say, words of affirmation. And so like compliments are huge to fours, you know, telling them that they're significant or like what you love about them. But also make sure that you're giving them time to process their emotions, that you're not rushing them, that you're not telling them to cheer up, like just let them be and process the way that they need to.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of people that listen that are fours.
Cool.
They're so unique and, you know, uniquely express themselves. So I'm sure many can relate to this one. How about fives?
You need to be really independent to be with a five. So, or to like get along with a five because they value that independency. Remember, they value their boundaries and the alone time and things like that. And so, you know, don't surprise them. You need to be straightforward with them. Allow for alone time and just respect their boundaries in general.
Oh, my brother is a five. Like the more you're talking about this, I'm like, okay, that's my brother for sure. But then maybe, oh man, their love language, that would be hard to
definitely difficult because whereas like twos, you can see them all.
Yeah.
Fives are like a little bit more removed from their emotions and that kind of thing.
Right.
So I would say maybe acts of service because it's more like a quiet thing, you know, or a physical touch if it's like a partner or something.
Yeah, for sure. For my brother, maybe his wife, for sure, physical touch. But I feel like for me, he probably appreciates acts of service.
Yeah.
And words, he does like words of affirmation though too. Mm-hmm. How about sixes?
Yeah, so for sixes, I was just thinking about love languages for them. It's so hard. I would almost say acts of service for sixes as well. They do value quality time, but not to the same level as like twos and threes, I would say. But to get along with a six, you know, you need to reassure them that everything's going to be okay, be able to like calm them down and just like offer that peaceful presence to them, communicate, listen to their worries and things like that.
Yeah, they really deeply need people that can listen and that they feel they can trust to listen to. I'm sure, like, in order for them to thrive, yeah, I see them having a hard time being fully lonely or not, in solitude. Otherwise, yeah, they'd probably just go stir crazy in their mind.
For sure.
Sevens. I already know my love language. I'm curious what you're going to say.
For sevens, you know, to get along with them, you need to have stimulating conversation and stories, mm-hmm. and, you know, like, listen to their grand ideas, encourage them to pursue all of those things, take them into their new, you know, like, just going on adventures and things like that.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. Going on an adventure for sure. How about their love language?
Yeah. So their love language, I would say quality time.
Yeah. That's probably my second.
Okay.
But, you know, because we're all individual. It's not like every seven's the same, right? But mine is physical touch. For when it comes to a partner.
Physical touch, for sure. Because, especially in that partner relationship. But I have so many friends who are sevens and they just love to hug.
Yeah.
Like the huggers, and like COVID has been killing them, right?
For sure. Well, I love to hug people that I know, but also I do hug a lot of strangers as well. But there are times where I just don't want to shake someone's hand. But yeah, no, I do love to hug. Yeah, I obviously love to hug, but yeah, it's so interesting. Yeah. Physical touch is definitely huge for me. And then eight.
Yeah, so eights, you need to be direct with them. Like, don't beat around the bush. Recognize their independence, you know, show them stability and freedom. Just really, you know, like, noticing who they are behind that strong exterior.
Yeah. When they are all riled up and fiery, what are ways that, you know, they might receive, let's say, your act of love, though they're crazy, going wild in that moment? Like, what could potentially calm them down, or how would they receive whatever you're trying to offer best?
I'll be honest, it doesn't usually go well in the moment.
For sure. You're trying
to, you know, get an eight to not be passionate for a minute. But I would say, you know, physical touch is probably important to them, like just reaching out and grabbing their hand, or, you know, remembering that they're, or having them remember that you're there, things like that. I would also say that gifts are probably important to eights, as well as acts of service. So I can see all of those three with them.
For sure. Makes sense. How about nines?
Yeah. And then for nines, you know, like I said earlier, you really need to encourage them to voice their own opinions, to, you know, have their own thoughts and not just go with the flow of everybody around them. Be really patient with them and, you know, take the time to really focus in on who they are.
Yep.
And being careful with conflict, right?
Exactly. Like, try to not, you know, stir something up with them, for sure. I just realized the time. Okay, so are there – oh, wait, I do have a question. Is there a rarest type? Does there happen to be a rare one?
I don't think so. I think a lot of people say – like fours, just because they are unique.
Mm-hmm.
I've really seen, I would say, like, seeing female fives or female eights can be rare at times, just because of who society tells us to be, which is like a whole another hour long conversation, right?
Oh, yeah. Because one could be a five or eight, but they've, you know, suppressed it.
Right. And so sometimes it's hard for people to recognize themselves as those types because we're taught innately not to act that way.
Ooh.
As women. And so that's definitely, you know, something to explore too.
That's super interesting. Good thing we're in 2020, and so of course the younger generations are becoming more and more authentically themselves,
right?
Okay, so I have one last question that I wait, do you have any final messages?
I don't think so, but now that I'm thinking about it, did I do the love language for nine?
No, like we did it.
So for nine, I would say also acts of service and words of affirmation. Mm-hmm. You know, like hearing that their opinion matters and that their voice matters and that they matter in general is really important.
Amazing. Okay. I know some peacemakers because they've also told me they're nine, and I'm like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Words of affirmation, I don't know. They do like a lot of compliments. I know that. And they do also give a lot of compliments.
Yeah.
Like they always are saying, I love you or something, you know, or say something that they appreciate about you. So I love nines. I appreciate them so much.
They're such nine people.
And I even had a nine break up with me once and they had the hardest time doing that. And I thought that was really funny.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
They avoided it at all costs and waited till like the worst moment.
Yeah, for sure.
And okay, so I do have one last question that I ask all the Your Own Magic guests.
Yeah.
How would you advise the Your Own Magic listeners to create their own magic?
Oh, man. I would advise them to just be true to themselves and who they are and what they want in life. And to match, obviously, like to connect it to the Enneagram, to match those strengths from your Enneagram type with what you want to be doing.
Mm-hmm. And where do you recommend they go? I know that you said in the beginning, like there's a variety of tests and that, you know, you got to go beyond the test. But what do you have one test you recommend the most?
I really like the Ready, the Riso Hudson Enneagram Typing Institute, some mouthful, R-A-T-T-I, and they have a paid version and a free version, and I just typically send people there.
Oh, nice. And also, you know, you work with people one-on-one as well. How can everyone connect with you?
Yeah, so my website is just enneagramashton.com and on Instagram at enneagramashton.
Perfect. I'm glad that Dana Max sent me your way because I've been so curious about exploring more about the Enneagram. And for a long time, I've been wanting to have someone come on who is a master, an expert at the Enneagram. So I'm so thankful it finally happened because so many people ask about it. So yeah, this is great.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we might have to come on some other time to expand beyond the basics because there's so much to it.
Yeah.
This hour went by so fast. I was like, wait, are you serious? I still have like so many more things to ask.
Yeah, there's so many things you can talk about with the Enneagram. It's so complex.
For sure. Ashton, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm so glad.
Yomis, that is a wrap. That is a wrap for this episode. I hope that something spoke deeply to you, expanded you in some way. Please let me know if so. You can catch me on Instagram at Raquel Mantra. I spell Raquel a different way than most, so you can see the spelling in the show notes. Or hang out with the Yomis, the like-minded, very conscious and expansive and helpful souls on the Your Own Magic Facebook group, especially a place to turn to when it comes to, well, whatever you're going through. And there are several tools on the YourOwnMagic.life membership site. The Pyrite is monthly and the Gold membership is just a one-time payment. But don't forget that experience called home. You can visit that at yourownmagic.life/home. And that will be with Bree Melanson and I, my fellow alien channeling Palladian boss babe. All right, well, thank you so much and have a magical rest of your day.